Hello, and welcome to On Repeat with Beth and Susanna. This is a frank and honest podcast about the reality of living with OCD. Disclaimer, we are not mental health professionals. Please visit OCD Action for services that can help and support you. Beth has a chat with the fabulous Patrick Ryan. Pat is a graphic designer all the way from New Zealand, now based in London. Beth met Pat a few months ago through a mutual friend, and he quickly revealed she was the first person he had ever knowingly met who also had OCD. For years, he has felt like he is the only person who experiences it, and this episode is all about realizing we are not alone. Just a quick warning, they do cover some topics in their chat, which may be upsetting. Pat is amazingly brave and open, and they delve into what he calls the tea.
I don't care if someone tortures me in a room and or I have to run like up a hill with a big backpack in the cold.
Yeah,
it's that would be easier than going to work with my OCD. God. I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
Yeah.
Just to warn you, there is some explicit language in use during this chat.
I feel like when we met the other day, I was just so much better at putting into words
how
my OCD manifests. That's the word. Yeah. And I was more eloquent. I could kind of
do
like...
Do you feel like when it's worse, it's harder to describe it?
Yeah. And when I'm in it, I feel like it kind of clouds my brain. So it kind of makes things more difficult. I feel like I'm stuck back here.
Mm-hmm.
Like being present.
If you're having a bad day today, sitting here right now, everything I'm saying, you're like getting it, but it's OCD.
That's it.
Yeah. I completely understand that. Oh God, it's the worst.
And I don't even know what the word is for that.
No, I don't know.
Like, I'm stuck in it, kind of thing. Like, I don't know.
Stuck. Yeah. Stuck, yeah. You feel stuck. The thing I wanted to start by asking you. Hi, Pat, by the way.
Hey.
Hello.
Beth, hey.
So Pat did the artwork for the podcast, which, by the way, thank you so much. Love it. I could never have done that. So we met through a friend, obviously, who you work with. I'm interested. Did Sarah tell you about it? And then you kind of went, I'm really interested in that because I have OCD. Or did she already know you have OCD? Like, what was the situation? How did this... What made you want to get involved in this podcast, essentially?
Well, I think me and Sarah were talking about anxiety in the office. And then for some reason, she mentioned that you had a podcast about anxiety.
Yeah.
And then she said, oh, it's about OCD. And I was like, I jumped. I was like, oh my God, what? Like, I wasn't expecting her to say that because no one ever kind of mentions that in the context of anxiety. It's always, you know what I mean? Like, you've talked about this. Everyone talks about this cleanliness or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was so interested, and I kept talking to her about it.
So before that, she didn't know?
She had no idea. No, I never talk. I mean, I talk about my anxiety, but I never mention it's OCD because of the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Or not even the judgment, the assumptions people make about what it is.
I'm exactly the same. I've called it anxiety for years and years and years until maybe the last couple of years. Yeah.
It's got such a bad rep. It's got a problem with like OCD has bad PR. Like, people, like, get the wrong message of what OCD actually is. And the message that what people currently think it is completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I never mention it in the context of my anxiety, because people aren't going to understand what I'm talking about. So I never mentioned it to her.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, then I met you at her birthday, and then we started talking about that. And then I met various people with anxiety over the years, but nobody's had OCD.
You're
the very first person I've ever met, you and your sister.
Whoa.
I thought I was the only person my age who actually had it, because...
Oh, my gosh.
Where is everyone who has it?
Okay, well, this I'm so glad. I'm so relieved for
you. I think I would have gone, or I could have gone through my entire life never meeting somebody with OCD besides myself, because I literally don't know anybody. I think my grandmother may have had OCD, but...
Do you? What makes you think that?
She exhibited all the signs, but
right,
not in terms of obvious compulsions or obsessions, but...
It's not always obvious, though.
It's not. That's a good point.
Mm.
She is very much a perfectionist, and not in, like, a tidy way that people assume OCD is.
In, like, a stressed out.
In a stressed out, like, I must be the best at everything I do. Whatever I put my mind to, I have to be good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like she had it, but besides from her... My mum is really anxious, but she doesn't have OCD.
I think to have somebody with OCD create the logo, I think has then given the image a lot more weight.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to describe what your thoughts were behind the creation of the logo. Is there like a meaning behind it? What made you choose to kind of repeat the title over and over and stuff like that?
I thought it was such an obvious execution that it was brilliant.
I would have never thought of it though.
That's what I mean. I didn't either. I was like, that's such a good way to say it. I went through so many different iterations, different ideas of like complex things. And then I was like, wait a minute. Why don't I just make it really simple? Repeat it. That's the thing. It's a design principle, repetition.
Yeah.
We learn about it in design school.
Yeah.
And I was like, just do that. It's fine.
You are a creative person, clearly. I wonder if that's then why you also do suffer with this particular...
Oh, so...
Because it's about creating...
I very much believe in, like, the tortured artist. Mm. And I feel like anyone who's creative, literally, like... I went to the Van Gogh... I can't pronounce it. Van Gogh. That's how you pronounce it, apparently. I went to the museum. Van Gogh.
Van Gogh?
Yeah, apparently that's how you pronounce it properly in Dutch. I might be wrong. Don't go over this. Look it up on Wikipedia. But I went to the museum in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And I actually, like, really connected with him and... I got quite emotional because I know he was insane, whatever, clinically insane, and he cut off his own ear. I'm not going to do that. But
please don't.
I really related with him because he was always struggling with being creative and like inner demons. And that's so me. If I was back in the day and I didn't have as much help as I had,
well,
I would be him.
Yeah.
Fully him. And I think my friends, when I was saying this, I think my friends are like, oh, you're a bit weird, Patrick. Like, are you going to cut off your own ear? I'm like, no, no. Like, you don't get it because obviously you've never been through anything like that.
Mm.
I had so much empathy for him. I do think that is, like, a massive part of me, a tortured artist. Mm. I feel like it kind of helps me, my OCD, and being more creative. But it also stops me from being as creative as I could be.
This is what I think,
because I question myself so much.
Mm-hmm.
And also, 50% of the time, my brain is being used up about ridiculous things.
Yeah.
50% capacity is used up with these repetitive thoughts. The other 50% has to do everything else.
Yeah.
And it can't do everything. It can't, like, do my bodily functions or whatever.
Yeah.
And also be creative on top of that.
It's just too impossible. Much in exactly. your brain. It's too much
so
to
So I feel
do
like
it.
I do have a bit of a handicap when it comes to creativity sometimes.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, I used to cry for, like, hours.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I couldn't get over this hump of, like, questioning myself.
Yeah.
And I had, like, a deadline.
Yeah.
An upcoming deadline. Everyone was like working hard and being really creative. And I would say, and I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but I would say my artistic talent is actually probably above average.
Yeah.
But I feel like because I have this, it stops me from reaching my full potential.
Yeah.
So I really felt that at university. People who, I guess, weren't as naturally gifted as me sometimes did better.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with that, but I feel like.
There is something wrong with that because it's frustrating.
It's frustrating for me.
That you've got a disorder that's maybe holding you back. So I suppose the thing is, tortured artist thing I get, but I also think...
Yeah.
I think a lot of the reason we have OCD is because we're creative people.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean that if we manage to either recover or find a really, really, you know, really good way of managing it, then you're still that person. You are still an entire creative person, but you won't have all that... annoyance and like hideous hell and time consumingness of having OCD as well.
We would have one simple exercise to do before a Friday or something, so we'd get it on the Monday, an exercise we had to complete before Friday, and I'd be there on Thursday night at design school, like literally ripping my hair out, distraught because I couldn't overcome, like rocking back and forth on the ground because I literally, there's nothing I can do to stop myself questioning
everything. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the thing. But
I think that's really interesting.
Is it weird that I'm kind of proud I'm a tortured artist in a way?
No,
I don't know why.
I think anybody that lives with a mental health disorder and anybody that is living with OCD at the moment when listening to this should feel proud of themselves for everything that they're achieving or doing, even if all that is getting out of bed, even if it's not getting out of bed, even if it's putting on this podcast and listening to it. Bryony Gordon says something amazing. So Bryony Gordon, the journalist who writes a lot about OCD, she said something amazing on a podcast, which was she's run a couple of marathons now, but she never used to run before. And then she kind of started running in her 30s and she'd never, ever done it before. But when it came to running a marathon, she got to marathon stage, running the marathon, and she hit the wall, you know, the whole runner's wall thing, which obviously you're going to hit. She says, nothing will ever be as hard as my worst days with my mental health where I can't do anything or I feel like I can't do anything. Like, this is nothing compared to what I've dealt with already.
This is the tea, Beth, okay? Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going to say because the other day we were talking about...
What's the tea mean?
The truth.
Where guys, have you been? This is the tea. Okay, cool. Tea.
But we were talking about the TV show SAS, Who Dares Wins. So I haven't actually watched it, but okay. We were talking about it in the office and somebody said, Patrick, oh, you couldn't do that. I think because I come across as, I guess, soft-spoken, I'm kind of fragile. I guess in a certain way we'll get back to that.
Yeah. But,
and in my mind I was like, you have no idea. No, I wasn't offended by what they said, but I mean...
You don't know what I'm battling.
I actually could easily do that.
Because mm-hmm.
I'd rather do what they have to do. What, yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
I can, like, make a blood oath right now.
Yeah, no, and say I can, that because I believe you.
I don't care if someone tortures me in a room and or I have to run, like... up a hill with a big backpack in the cold.
Yeah,
it's that would be easier than going to work with my OCD. Cool. I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
Yeah, I believe you.
What she said is completely relatable.
Wow, that's amazing that you say that. Yeah. I remember writing that down age like 14 or something in my diary. I remember writing down like something like, anyone that needs to be tortured should be given OCD as their torture. Like, if that was a thing.
I love that.
Like, that's what I wrote down. So you've just worded exactly what
I'm trying to think of stuff that I could do. I could literally do anything. A bungee jump. I don't know. I could do anything.
Yeah.
You could. Pretty bad, but I could go to war.
Yeah.
I could do stuff. And it would be easier than what I'm dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. So when people say that, I laugh inwardly, but I'm also, it riles me up.
Mm. And that's why I want people to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Because people don't know.
Exactly, yeah.
If they're
this, like, carefully put together facade mm-hmm. is actually all fake.
Because you look amazing.
I'm a fake bitch, yeah.
You're not a fake bitch, though. No. What you're doing is you're being fucking brave every single day.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's
I think
what
we all are.
Yeah, I think anybody that's suffering, obviously we are talking mainly about OCD, but any mental health disorder can be completely... But OCD can be... such a debilitating thing to deal with.
And I think, like...
What's his name? Ant Middleton. You can shout at me as much as you want, mate, because it's nothing compared to my
what's
OCD.
What's the fit one? I wish my OCD looked like him. Then he could stay around.
No, you're completely right. I think that's so...
I just... Yeah, what was I going to say?
Valid.
Nothing that anybody ever says mm-hmm. is worse than what my OCD says.
Really?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nothing anyone can do to me will ever be as bad, I guess... as what my OCD does to me every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, if someone, like, cuts your leg off or you get murdered, it's going to be... You know what I mean?
It's not great,
but I'm, like, still going to be around.
No,
but, I mean, it's just, like... And not to plug this again, because people say
plug
I talk about this all the
it.
Time.
Plug it.
But that one time
this
I was
is the
on
time.
First dates, and I got ripped to shreds on Twitter, got dragged through the mud.
No, you didn't.
Things. And I literally, it didn't hurt me.
Really?
It was water off a duck's back. I say all those things to myself all the time. Literally, all the stuff that they said, I was like, that is not original.
Yeah.
I say that to myself when I wake up in the morning. So, like, is
your brain is so much nastier to you than anyone else could ever be.
There you go.
Essentially.
Yeah.
OCD is like... I almost find the word bully isn't enough because that's what I was told, like, in therapy or whatever. It's a bully, it's a school bully. I don't know what the right word is. Well, it's hard to describe
it's like
it.
A parasite?
A parasite, that's good.
Kind of thing?
Yeah. That like, it shouldn't
thrives.
Live there and it's living off you.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's thriving and having a good time and
mm-hmm.
you're like the tree or whatever, like, wilting.
Yes.
I don't know, like, I'm thinking of, like, a plant kind
no,
of
No, I think that's
analogy.
Good.
Analogy, yeah.
It often can pretend that it's nice... parasite, if that
yeah.
makes sense. So in that sense, it's a bit like a drug addiction because mm-hmm. not that it is that, but it tells you you need it to mm-hmm. look after you, as in it will say you need to work out if you're having like internal intrusive thoughts and compulsions in your brain. It will be like, you need to work this out, you need to sort this out, you need to do this, Patrick, you need to do this, blah 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 blah, and it will tell you need to do that to be happy and mm-hmm. to live a happy life.
Does
that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's like doing it in like a I'm going to protect you way kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to double check that. It's worth just checking again because you don't want the house to set on fire. So maybe just check again. It's worth it. Just check. I'm looking out for you. Check, check, check. I'm looking out for you.
Oh, 100%. It's like a defense mechanism. Mm. It's like it disguises itself as... It's like a wolf in shepherd's clothing. Or it's like the wolf in Little Red Riding Hood.
How long have you known you suffer with it? Like, were you diagnosed by a doctor?
Or... I found my own behaviour really strange.
Mm-hmm.
From the age of about 8.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was. And I didn't tell anyone about it. And I thought that if I did tell people, they'd think I was crazy.
Do you mind me asking, like, what kind of stuff?
That's when I did my compulsions.
Yeah.
So that's when my compulsions are really prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do them at all anymore.
Yeah, it's like me.
So I did, like, when I was 8, I used to have this prayer.
Yeah.
I wasn't religious, but I just had this prayer where I repeated things over and over again for about 20 to 30 minutes before he went to bed every night.
Yeah.
And I can remember it now because I did it for, a decade.
Yeah.
One of them was, like, repeating this line about not getting appendicitis, because this girl had got appendicitis in my dance group, and for some reason that had, like, caught hold in my brain.
Yeah.
My OCD had latched onto that.
Yeah.
And from then on, I just kept thinking about that, even though she was fine and she, you know.
Yeah.
She had moved on.
Yeah.
I was still thinking about it. So concerned. So I used to do this prayer.
Yeah.
Which was 30 minutes. Ugh. And then I would usually read a book.
Yeah.
And then before I'd turn my light out, I went to the bathroom, even if I didn't need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way back down the hallway, I used to touch everything.
Yeah.
And I used to run my fingers like along edges and walls and light switches. Damn, I can't show you because it's a podcast. I can't show you guys
He's doing some beautiful kind of floaty movements.
Yeah, like a dance. Yeah, it's very beautiful.
It's contemporary. Yeah. You're doing your contemporary.
Just run like my finger along the edge of something.
Yeah.
And
like a certain amount of times.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And then shutting and closing my bedroom door.
Mm-hmm.
And doing this to the doorknob.
Yeah. Can you describe, for somebody listening that hasn't got OCD and doesn't understand the need to do those things, can you remember what that was pushing you to need to do that? Like, what was the feeling or the thought?
Oh, okay. That's a very good point. So I used to say that prayer about not getting appendicitis because I was extremely scared that for some reason I would just get it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we all know that you're only going to get that if your appendix gets
inflamed or whatever. Yeah.
Inflamed or something hits it. Or
yeah.
I don't really know how it works, but yeah.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Oops. Yeah. But I was deathly scared of that. I thought it was going to happen to me. And the thing with me, especially back then, is that if I heard about something bad happening to somebody, I'd be really scared that would happen to me.
Which is a really normal way to feel.
Mm.
But if then your brain kind of tried to control it from happening.
Yeah, but I was certain it was going to happen.
Yeah.
So what I had to do was I had to repeat these things over and over again. I actually knew it was futile.
Yeah.
I knew doing all this stuff wasn't really going to help me not get it. But it was
going
to help me a bit, I think.
100%,
and that's why
I
did it. I don't really, really know. Because I knew at the time, I was like, why am I doing this? I can't. But I couldn't stop
myself.
But
you can't help it.
I couldn't stop. And even after running my... So, continuing from that, I went into my room, I ran my fingers over the light switch, like I just said, all that stuff. Then weirdly, like, touched the edges of my curtains like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't know why.
No, the curtain thing as well, yeah.
And my bedspread, and then got into bed, and then I had a light above my bed, a lamp, and I would turn it on and off for, like, 10 times, and then finally go to bed, and then I was still thinking about it. So, but I don't really know why. Then, so, at the age of about 16 or 17, I realised that was really futile and it wasn't helping me.
Mm.
So I actually managed to get over it myself.
Amazing.
Which is crazy.
So without therapy?
No, without therapy,
I managed to... You just stopped doing the compulsions.
That isn't helping me.
Wow.
It's taking up too much of my time. My brother thinks I'm really weird.
That's incredible that you did that on your own. Like, that is amazing.
Thank you. I just knew it wasn't
That's
working.
Brave. Again, that goes back to, you know, somebody that made that comment about you and the SAS thing. Again, somebody making that comment won't understand what that will have taken for you to do that. Because I try and explain it to people as, like, think of, like, your worst fear. Say you're terrified of jumping out of a plane and skydiving. That was that, in terms of what you just did. In terms of the fear and the anxiety and the... So, wow, that's great.
Like, when I stopped doing that prayer, I thought I was going to get appendicitis or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't just that. It was like...
A million different things.
My mum was
going to
die and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like a whole list.
Yeah.
So I fully thought all that stuff was going to happen, and it didn't.
Great.
So it made me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
But then I still had compulsions inside my head and intrusive thoughts, which are harder to cure.
I find them very difficult because it feels like, and again, this goes back to OCD being a bit like a snake or like a parasite of some sort. If you feel like you did there, you really showed it who's boss. Like you went, I'm not going to do that prayer. And look, I haven't got appendicitis. I'm fine. It snakes its way in and goes, oh, he's got me. Damn it. I'll try this.
And that's exactly what happened to me, Beth. That is a perfect way.
That's what happened to me too.
Hit the nail on the head. So I have two main obsessions. The first one started around the age of 12 or 13. And that one I'm not scared of anymore.
Okay.
So I can talk about that one quite freely.
Great.
So that was the fear of forgetting how to see.
Oh my word.
Or going blind.
Okay. Wow.
Don't know where it came from. Nothing set me off at school. I don't know why, but I do remember walking home from school one time with my mum and trying to get verbal reassurance from her that I wasn't going to go blind suddenly. Mm-hmm. And obviously as a mum, she was like, no, it's not going to happen. That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen like that. You can't just suddenly wake up and be blind. Mm. And for some reason, no matter how many times she said I was going to be okay, I didn't feel reassured.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when I knew things were a bit wrong.
Yeah.
So then obviously I was doing all my compulsions every night before bed. Then I got to the age of 15. And around that time, I had just stopped doing my compulsions. And then suddenly, bam, I had this massive obsession hit me. Mm. And that's the one that's consumed my life.
Yeah. You don't have to talk about that if you don't want to.
I kind of don't want to say it, only because...
No, don't. Honestly...
I'm kind of scared of it today.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, then, let's not talk about it today. Everything you're talking about is amazing
anyway. Let's just say it's another... I guess you can say bodily function. Something like seeing or hearing or taste or whatever.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Failing you.
Failing me just out of nowhere. And that hit me on my 15th birthday.
And it's not gone.
And it's never gone. So now I'm nearly 30 and... I can't remember a day that I haven't been tortured by that same fear.
Ugh.
Since I was 15. It's consumed my life. And then I kind of, when I went to university, I kind of managed to get over it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of, it did get better.
Yeah.
And then in my last year of university, I was doing an honours degree, which I don't really know if they have it in the UK. It's kind of like an extra year of study. It's kind of between a bachelor's and a master's. And, I had a lot of free time then, which didn't help. And also a lot of pressure because I was writing a dissertation and I wanted it to be really good and perfect. And that's when this other one hit.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like the worst one.
Is that
I can't even tell.
That's from when you were 15?
No, it's another one now. That is the worst one. And that's what really affected my quality of life. I mean, my quality of life already was extremely... affected by the one that happened at 15, but this one is just insane. And I literally couldn't speak when I woke up in the morning because I was so racked with anxiety.
So that it's kind of been three major things. Have you been to the doctors about it? You have.
Yeah.
So when did you first get told this is what you've got?
So after university I moved back home because I couldn't live with anybody else. I couldn't do anything. And I had to tell my mum, but it took me a couple of weeks to do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't tell her straight away, but I was like, you know what? I have to tell her this.
Mm.
So she got me therapy in my town in New Zealand and it was...
And did they say, you've got OCD?
They actually didn't.
Interesting. Okay.
Which is, I don't know if I should have done this, but I kind of knew it was.
Mm.
Because I know my mental health quite well.
Yeah.
Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I kind of self-diagnosed myself.
Okay.
And then I prompted the doctor.
Yeah.
The therapist. I said, I think it might be this.
Yeah.
And then obviously after talking to me for a couple of weeks, she was like, oh yeah, I think you're right. Whereas, I mean, I definitely have OCD, but I feel like looking back, I wish I hadn't have said that.
Do you think?
I wish she kind of would have got to it herself because...
Ah, okay.
I don't know. Like maybe it was something else. I mean, it's not, but... I don't know.
I wonder if that's an element of OCD thinking coming out. I think basically what I'm trying to say is she would have come to that conclusion, I think.
I think it's me kind of maybe almost like wishful thinking. Maybe she wouldn't have said I had it. Maybe just like...
And then maybe she'd never said it. It wouldn't have been true.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, but now that I said it, it's... Yeah. I put it out into the universe and now it's true.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's...
I wish it happened with like $1 million if I said, like, I want $1 million, I would get it.
I know, but we only ever think it with bad things.
Exactly, and that's what you said. I'm like, why does it work that way? It's so unfair.
It's so annoying.
But
yeah,
like, catastrophize about like horrible things that would happen to me.
Yeah, but you never do it about the good stuff.
No.
Or if I do do it about good stuff, like I am a daydreamer, I'll daydream, and then I'll get the... Oh, well, you've thought that now, so it's never going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why don't you do that with the bad stuff? With the bad stuff, you go, oh, my God, you've thought it. That's awful. What if that happens? You need to try and control that.
You're, like, so certain that the bad stuff will happen, but with good stuff...
But when you imagine, you know, winning your Oscar, like, it goes, you know, the doubting voice goes, well, that's never going to happen. I mean, obviously, I know it will, but...
But it's true, though. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, what is that?
Like, because I don't know if this is part of my OCD, but I have, like, grand visions. I'm a daydreamer as well, so I have all these, like, things where, like, I'm going to win an Oscar, I'm going to be a K-pop star, I'm going to do all this stuff, but then I don't actually do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it always kind of puts a downer or a dampener on these things.
Yeah, it goes, well, that's not going to happen, is it?
Yeah.
But we don't say that about the bad stuff. Well, we should. We should go, okay, possible. Unlikely, though, mate. So carry on. Mm. Like, that's what somebody without OCD
does. Your OCD is like, Oscar.
Yeah.
Possible
Oscar
birth.
Now.
Yeah. Unlikely, maybe a Razzie.
So, sorry. So you had therapy then. So you've gone, techniques have you tried?
So...
to tackle.
She did a CBT, I think, but it was kind of like a bit of hypnosis.
Okay, yeah.
Now, I haven't really heard of it in the UK.
Oh, Susanna's tried hypnosis.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she basically like told me to think of something and then she would wave something in front of my face, like hypnosis, and then kind of tell me to forget about it, I think. I can't really remember it exactly.
Okay. Was that
it's
useful?
Probably different techniques. No.
Sorry.
Not at all for me.
No.
Thanks for laughing about that.
Sorry, though. Sorry.
No, because I started to panic the minute she started doing it, that I wasn't doing it correctly. Like, my eyes weren't following her correctly.
I think
you can't, it's not going to work for you.
Yeah.
So I did that.
Okay.
And then when I moved to the UK, I had... CBT and the NHS.
Okay.
And then...
And how...
It didn't work for me.
Okay.
No. And then I just had talking therapy as well.
Yeah.
Just because I found that kind of...
It's nice to be able to chat about the way you're feeling, even if it's not dealing with the OCD necessarily.
And even that kind of makes me feel like 50% better.
Wow.
Just talking
about it.
That's great. I mean, when I'm having a really bad day, it's just nice to get that load off my chest and then I can kind of move on a little bit.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I think
not
that's
carrying
good.
It around with me.
Yeah.
And so talking therapy is good for me. And then at the end of last year, I had CBT again. And it got to the end of the 12 weeks you get on the NHS.
Yeah.
And she had given me all these tasks to do, which I didn't really deliver on.
Yeah.
I just couldn't really put them into practice.
Yeah.
And again, I thought, to use the word again, futile. I just thought doing them wouldn't really help me. I didn't believe in it, so I didn't do them.
Okay.
I was a bad student.
No, but would you say that that's to do with the cloud that we were discussing at the beginning? Because, and this is where I think CBT can work so amazingly for certain people, but it does feel like sometimes maybe, I don't know what the answer is, but sometimes you feel very, very clouded and you're completely consumed by the OCD. And I've been in that place when I was about 16 and nothing my therapist said was going to make any difference. No CBT was going to do anything. It was like, and for me, it took going on medication and thankfully, like eventually, after quite a long time of waiting for it to take effect, it really helped. And then I was able to do the CBT stuff. But before I had the medication, it was literally like fog. I'm sorry, nothing he was saying was going to help me. Was how I felt. Not saying that's true.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Well, I got so much from her from just talking about it.
Okay, good.
Which was really good. And she was really understanding. And I'd never broken down in a therapy session before. Because I always have this facade. I always, even in my therapy session, I was like,
yeah, oh God,
like trying
too.
To crack jokes. Same, to be charming. Yeah. I'm like, she doesn't care if I'm like, I'm not dating her.
And you're paying, well, I mean, I've been paying for therapy and I sometimes think, well, I'm paying for this. Why am I
like trying to be charming and like making them like think that you're a funny, like witty person? I'm like, she doesn't give a shit. It's
she
her job.
She doesn't care. She's here to help you. Like, yeah. No, but it's true.
I'm acting in my normal everyday life, but I'm acting with her. And then one time I just kind of let that guard down, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then we had a really kind of raw, honest therapy session, which is really helpful. But then I just can't put these things into practice because I don't think it's going to work for me. And then I feel like we need to talk about the medication as well.
Yeah.
Because for me, nothing's worked.
Okay.
So I've tried fluoxetine, which I think they call Prozac.
Right.
Is it Prozac in America?
I'm not sure.
And then I had venlafaxine. And now I just, in the last week, started on this one called, I can't even pronounce it, Mertz... Blah, blah, blah. P?
Mertz, blah, blah. Have you tried sertraline?
No, I was going to do that last week, and he was... The doctor, my GP just said, no, try this one.
So oh, interesting. Okay.
I'll try that one if this one doesn't work, which it won't, because I tried those three. He gave me a bit of Valium. Valium isn't a long-term solution. Everyone
it can
knows
help you
that.
Calm down, though. Yeah.
But my grandmother was addicted. Obviously, they used to prescribe it in the 60s.
Yeah.
Because once they found it, they were like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
This is going to solve everything. And obviously, it didn't because people get dependent on it. And every time I've tried Valium, doesn't matter what dosage you put me on, does not work for me.
Really?
Nothing does. They're like, 10 milligrams is like the most you can take. Or, sorry, 20 or whatever it is. And I'm like, it literally does nothing.
Doesn't do anything. Okay. And then so like, it's obviously just not for you then.
No, and going back to Amsterdam for a second.
Yeah.
I tried marijuana for the first time.
Yeah.
When I first went down to Amsterdam. And then I went back again last year. And I was like, well, it didn't work smoking it. I'll try like eating a whole brownie. And the guy behind the counter was like, oh, you know, it's like your second time. I wouldn't advise eating a whole thing because
you're
probably going to be knocked out. And I was like, look, hun. Like,
so
you don't
ate
know
a
me.
Brownie?
I ate a whole thing, fine.
Nothing.
And all my friends, nothing.
Nothing at all?
No. No, 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 no,
whoa.
And all my friends were like, my friend who's a psychiatrist, lol.
Yeah.
That's kind of a coincidence. Was like so giggly and all over the place. And it didn't do anything for me.
At all. That is baffling. I wonder whether it's something to do with your brain being so highly wired, like highly on it with anxiety that... potentially, it doesn't even touch the sides.
Exactly, and this is what I keep trying to tell GPs and doctors, and whenever I kind of say anything like that, they think I'm being ridiculous, because I don't really have anyone that knows my full history, and that's a problem. So recently, I decided to book myself in for a psychiatrist appointment.
Great.
A private one.
Cool, okay.
So it's an hour appointment. It's really, really expensive, but in that appointment, I hope I can actually give him all the information.
I think that's good.
And
to
then
have somebody.
Realize, who knows what they're talking about, but can also, because he's probably met people like me before, so who know what to do, because I'm not the only one that hasn't responded to these things.
No, you're not. You're not.
There are probably loads of people who haven't, because it's ridiculous, because like everyone I know, my mum, everyone I know who's suffered from anxiety takes a little bit of Valium and they're like so zen.
Yeah.
And for me, it doesn't work. So I'm like, there must be something else going on that's blocking it from working or... So yeah, so I want to say this too. I want to go on a bit of a rant, Beth.
Please
if
rant.
If you'll let me have this opportunity to rant.
This is your
because
chance.
Because I think therapy works or can work. I think medication can work. I don't like this snobbiness, I guess, that some people have over medication. Usually from people who don't suffer from OCD, usually say, you know, you can get over it just by talking to somebody. I don't really agree with that, but whatever. You know, people are entitled to their own opinions. I would also say, I think, and every single doctor I've talked to disagrees with me to some extent, but I think for me, it's very much nature and nurture.
Okay.
So it's very much hereditary as well as my upbringing.
Right.
Because some people say it's not hereditary, but I think it is. My grandmother definitely had it. Her mum had it. My grandmother's mum, she, like, this is, like, early 1900s, rural New Zealand. I mean, we're talking ridiculous. Like, out in the boonies, we say. I don't know if you guys say that.
The boonies.
The wop-wops. And apparently, according to, she had, like, what, like, 12 kids or something? Something ridiculous, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
And apparently, she was, like, super anxious and exhibited symptoms of OCD, and then her daughter did.
Yeah.
And then, so She had, I think she had 12 kids, and three of them were daughters, and the rest were sons, and all the daughters suffer from really bad mental health issues.
Wow, okay. So one of those was your grandma?
My grandmother was one of the sisters, and she was one that was more OCD, so kind of more perfectionist, which I do associate with OCD just because it really manifests in me.
For you, yeah.
Because my grandmother was very creative, and I'm very creative, and for her it was about being
getting
the best
artist,
because she was an artist, and that's going back to the tortured artist narrative.
Yeah.
I could see that in her, and I can see that in me.
Yeah.
So she is very much that. But she was just so obsessive about everything. It's really interesting talking about her as well, because she was obsessive up until the day she died, and it sounds really sad to say, but she wanted to be, she didn't want to get old, like, she wanted to get old gracefully.
Yeah.
As everyone does. Yeah. But, like, she was obsessed with it. Like, she was like, I am not going to put on any weight.
Oh, no.
So she, like, was anorexic.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, obsessed about her appearance.
Yeah.
And she was so, I think it was one of her obsessions. She never said it. It was really sad, but she was obsessed with weight. And she never wanted to gain any weight.
Yeah. But she wouldn't have known that she was suffering from a mental health disorder, did
she? She's very self-aware, so maybe she did, but... I mean, who knows?
She wouldn't have known it was OCD, I don't think.
No, no.
Back then.
I don't think so.
No.
And then so she was so obsessed. She was on a treadmill on the day she died.
Wow.
Running, like, on no, little or no food.
Yeah.
And collapsed because she didn't have enough energy in her system. And she died, and it's really sad. But she kind of, and this is a really, like, sad, we're not going to end on this note, by the way.
No, no. It's
but
important.
That's what can happen.
It's
because
important to talk about. Yeah.
She didn't have any help, and I think that's probably what kind of killed her.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
that's how serious it is, I think.
It can, because her obsession was being thin, so her compulsion was eating really, really healthily, but really small amounts.
Yeah.
And exercising obsessively.
Yeah.
And then that was
And it's that's very, obviously, very close to anorexia, and I don't know
enough
about anorexia.
Me either, yeah.
But, no, I'm not saying it as in don't talk about it. I'm saying it as in this is what Susanna experienced, because her OCD is all about being sick, because she's got a fear of being sick.
Which is my mum's one, by the way.
Really? Your mum?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's a weird phobia.
Metaphobia, it's
not
called.
Yeah.
So Susanna's got the phobia and the OCD on top of it, but she then tried to control it by not eating, because her, you know, OCD brain was like, well, don't eat, then you won't get sick.
Kind of makes sense.
It makes sense, but obviously it's completely that really difficult thing, which I discovered through doing this first the first podcast with Susanna. I never even knew this was happening when I was a child. The doctors kept saying she's got anorexia, and my mum knew that it wasn't, because she'd seen my OCD behaviour, and she could see that that's what it was for Susanna. And it's interesting, isn't it, how, again, that's about more education around OCD and what it is, because people don't understand it. And, I mean, with your grandma, do you feel like that was OCD, or do you feel like she suffered from both? Because I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I can't really say, and I want to be sympathetic towards her, and also...
Yeah, of course.
I know my mum is... she's from an older generation. My parents had me when they were 40, so...
Oh, wow, okay.
My mum's a baby boomer.
Yeah.
And I guess she's quite a private person. She doesn't really like people who aren't in the family knowing about this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't want to say, like, because I don't really know what my grandmother was going through.
Yeah.
But I think the signs, she may have had anorexia, but from what I can see from the other things she did, I think it was probably more OCD. My mum, I don't think she has OCD, but she just has really bad anxiety. And then, obviously, I have it too.
Mm.
But that's the hereditary side of things. In terms of nurture...
Yeah.
My childhood, I don't want to say too much because I don't know if my mum will listen to this, but my childhood was very intense.
Okay.
Tumultuous, to use that word. It's a good word. It wasn't beneficial for somebody like me suffering from OCD.
Right.
I think it made me a lot worse. And I think if my childhood had been calmer and happier in general, I wouldn't be in the same place I am now, because I think I would have gotten over it.
Right.
When I was walking home from school with my mum, and I was asking for reassurance about not going blind.
Yeah.
It would also be mixed up with stuff like, oh, I've I may have said something mean to somebody. I feel really bad about it. What am I going to do? Like, I just
Been there.
Console myself. Like, I just was so obsessed with other people's happiness, I guess. And
being a good person. Ripple effect.
Or being a good person, exactly.
This is exactly what me and Sasha spoke about.
Being a good person. I don't know if it was because I wanted to be a good person, because if I was a good person, bad stuff wouldn't happen to me, like my OCD.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was that. I don't know if it was motivated by that.
I think mine is motivated by that, definitely.
Yeah.
It's definitely a part of it.
It could be that. I mean, or I just wanted to be a good person. I don't really know.
I think for me, it's a bit of both.
I think it's a bit of both for me. Yeah. So I think it is, because who wants to be a bad person?
No, I mean, it's a bit of both, because mine would and still does occasionally be like, you're a bad person. Like, what if you're a bad person? But a huge amount of that is to do with the fact of, like, well, if I'm a bad person, will God smite me?
That's exactly it.
And sometimes I think of Bruce Almighty when he goes, "Smite me, Almighty Smiter." That's what I sometimes say to my OCD. If I have the thought, I'm agnostic, to be honest. I don't even know what I believe in, but.
But this is the thing. I was just going to talk. This is one of the topics I wrote down to talk about today.
Yeah.
Is, I call it magical thinking.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard that term before.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what that comes under, that umbrella.
Yeah.
Even my therapist in London, so my most recent one that I had at the end of last year, she actually stopped me halfway through one therapy session and she was like, "Are you a religious person?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "No.
No."
And she's like, "Oh, why were you doing prayers and things?" And I was like, "Oh, but it wasn't like religion based."
No. What is it that we think it is? That's the thing.
Exactly. I think there's something out there. This is what my OCD tells me. There's something out there that's going to smite me for doing bad things, being a bad person.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there are forces at work, whether it be karma or whatever, that I have no control over.
Yeah.
And they can smite me whenever they want to.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And I can't do anything about it.
I relate to this so much.
Yeah, thank God, because that's the main basis of my anxiety and OCD is magical thinking.
Yeah.
And then my therapist said to me, "Oh, so you think forces are at work and they only affect you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she's like, "What about other people?" And I'm like,
"No.
Well, no, they wouldn't affect Carol down the street." Like,
you know, Carol's fine.
Carol in accounts is fine.
Yeah.
Like, she's doing great.
Yeah.
But it would affect me
for
some reason, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
So she questioned that, and I didn't have an answer for it, and that's the problem. I don't have an answer for it, so...
It's a good question for her to have asked.
Yeah, but I can't make myself feel better, because I...
No, but I think it's a cool thing to know. It just helps, in a way, to know that somebody else who has also been diagnosed with the exact same mental health disorder as me thinks that, because there is the very logical part of me that's like, interesting how somebody with the same mental health illness as you is thinking the same thing. That's probably what it is then, isn't it? It's probably not this invented thing that's going to smite you because you thought, what if, blah, 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 and then you didn't touch wood. There's the part of me that is like, it's helpful to, and that's why I do think talking about it is good, because hopefully for anybody listening, there might be people listening that go, "I have that." And there's a feeling of like, at least knowing that other people can relate to that, that's got to be helpful. That's got to be a good thing. Just in a sense, I don't want anyone else to go through it, but to know that, firstly, you're not alone in it. Secondly, you're not a weirdo for thinking that stuff.
Yeah.
Because you feel like one big time.
Yeah.
When you don't realise anyone else feels it.
Mm.
And thirdly, that, oh, okay, maybe it's my illness. It's not real. I don't know if that's made any sense.
No, but I wonder what that thing is, because I'm not a superstitious person.
Mm.
I actually don't believe in ghosts or anything like
that. No, isn't that weird?
I think it's completely unfounded. It doesn't make any scientific sense. And yet I think about this other thing, but it's not based on anything like culture or pop culture related. It's not like...
I haven't read it somewhere or something.
No, I don't think there's like a witch's coven, like standing around a cauldron mixing together something that's going to affect my life. It's not based on anything like that. It's just this other thing.
I remember seeing a gravestone when I was about 15. We were on holiday, and it said Elizabeth, which is my actual name, said Elizabeth, age 21. So, you know, some poor person called Elizabeth had died age 21 in Victorian times. And I was 15 at the time, and I thought, I'm going to die when I'm 21. Because I'm called Elizabeth, and there's a gravestone. I can tell you, in every single graveyard, there are a lot of Elizabeths. Sadly, it's not a very... yeah. No offence, Mum and Dad. Quite like my name, but it's not the most inventive.
No.
And, you know, the Queen is called it. So...
True.
Do you know what I mean? But, like, that was, like... And because I'd had that intrusive thought and I'd believed it and I'd put... I'd given importance to it, even though there was... Where is the scientific... Why is that scientifically true? But I'm aware... I feel pretty like there's no such thing as ghosts.
I know, that's what I mean. And that's why, like, these days, what? I can watch horror films.
Yeah, same. And I'm like,
not
cool.
Be scared, because I'm like, this is not scary. This doesn't make any sense. It can never happen. Like, The Conjuring, what?
But no. I'm sorry, the fact that there's a gravestone over there that says...
That's scary. That's scary.
That's scary.
It really
guys,
is.
Guys, I'm 27. Yeah. I made it. But, you know, yay. I probably did. I don't remember, but I probably did do... either internal, like, probably internal, actually, in, like, thought compulsions to do with that on that holiday. We're on holiday. It will have... The fact that I remember it means it will have... I will have been doing stuff. I'm sure I will have done to try and conquer it because of the OCD.
Maybe superstitions. Maybe all these ghost stories that we have in human history come from people who have OCD.
I think they do.
Maybe we invented them. Maybe we wrote them down and or told them or whatever.
Genuinely, I... When I try to explain OCD to somebody that doesn't have it, who's asking, I always relate it back to, oh, are you superstitious? Very often they're like, yeah, I do touch wood. Most people touch wood. Yeah, I no longer do because that used to, it became a compulsion for me. So I now won't touch wood. But, and it's interesting being an actor, there was a lot of superstition in acting, like a lot. So, like, you can't say Macbeth in the theatre. So when I was going through CBT, I was making myself do all that stuff, and actually I ended up upsetting a few people in a theatre because I was saying it. They're like, can you stop saying it? And I was like, it's for my therapy.
Yeah, but it's my therapist said.
Yeah, but then I realised, you know, I don't want to be upsetting other people by doing my thing. Yeah, so I stopped. By the way, I am going to write, I don't know if I should say this on a podcast because I don't want someone to steal my idea, but probably going to write an all-female version of Macbeth called Macbetty.
That's so good.
Do you like
good.
It? Yeah.
Funny, or are we doing...
I don't know. I feel like Macbetty's really got to be funny, hasn't
gotta
she?
Got to be funny, yeah. That's really fun.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
I just thought I'd put it out there. Really I just remembered the idea, Macbetty.
Can I audition?
Yeah. Do you want to be McDuffie? Yeah. McHillary Duffy?
Yeah. Love her.
Anyway, but yeah, superstition thing. Yeah. I will always say to somebody, like, what's the feeling you get if you were to say, you know, oh... If the flight's okay, like, if we don't crash, ooh, touch wood. If I then don't allow you to touch wood, what does that feel? How does that feel? I would say it's that times, like, a gazillion.
Oh, 100%.
And then also the fact that, like, you could probably... It would be really shit that you'd be a bit like, I really want to touch wood, but you'd probably forget in about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's that, but you don't forget in 10 minutes.
And you don't forget, and it is in your mind for 2 decades.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I read something interesting about superstitions in a book called Thrive, which I have on here actually somewhere, under my bed. In it, the guy talks about superstition and he talks about where superstitions come from, and they all come from human beings trying to control the uncontrollable events in life. You can't control the randomness of life. Yeah. So OCD is an attempt, a human attempt to control something.
I think so too. I think... That kind of idea of lack of control is something that's been a big part of my life, especially in my formative years. Because I couldn't control what my parents were doing, I started to think, I'm the only person who's looking out for me. I'm the only person that's got my back. Mm. What happens if something happens to me? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So my OCD kind of played that on makes the fact sense. That...
It was protecting you.
Kind of, but it was like, oh, but if you get sick or if you go blind, what the fuck is going to happen to you? Because... No one has... I mean, I'm sure my parents would come through. I'm not saying that they're bad parents, but no. I mean...
That's how you felt,
That's
though.
How I felt at the time, and then it just played on that, and it got increasingly worse.
Ugh.
And that's how it kind of still manifests, even to this day. It's still think, if my OCD gets really bad and something comes true, if my fear does come true, then I would lose my job, and then I'd lose my flat, and then who would look after me?
It's the
catastrophizing. I think that's probably... That's like the,
that is the thing that's actually happening. Is the fact that you've got OCD, not the fact that you might go blind. But OCD clouds it. So, like...
I think the thing for me is that things were quite bad, and then my OCD was like, but they could get worse. I think that's what it said to me, and that's what it always does.
Okay.
And I think that's why I keep getting, like, every decade a new fear or a new obsession. Because I think for me, it just... I haven't managed to, like, stop it doing that.
Right.
So I think towards the end of the decade, because I haven't had this current one for a decade, once it completes its cycle, I feel like I'll be able to kind of manage it. Like, I can have the one that was affecting me when I was 15, but I still have.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'll get another one. Okay. Not to be really depressing, but I feel like that's how my one works. Because I can't be happy.
Right.
I think that's the problem with me.
Yes.
Is that when things are too good, when things are going well,
what's going to happen then?
If I've had 5 days of no OCD.
Really rarely happens.
Sometimes I do have a good run of a couple of days where I still have OCD because I haven't had a day since I was 15 when I didn't have proper OCD. But I have a couple of good days.
Yeah.
Where it isn't as severe.
Manageable.
Manageable, exactly. And then I'll reach some point. I don't know when it will be.
Mm.
Can't call it. Something will set me off and I'll be like, oh my God, what happens if it comes back?
Yeah.
And then it all spirals down.
Well, that
down.
Is it, a bit coming back, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't stop it. Once it's in my mind, that's it for me.
Well, I mean, I think that's really, really common in terms of when things are going well, it can flare up. That definitely happens to me. Like, oh my God, you've got this going on and that going on and you're really enjoying this.
Yeah.
Well, then what's going to happen to somebody in your family then? Something's going to happen to somebody or vice versa. Do you know what I mean? Things are going really well with family stuff. Oh, well then...
Yeah.
Your career's going to shit. Or it does
exactly.
It.
Yeah. It's exactly it. It just wants to ruin everything. And
And
like, it's so sad, but like, I cry before I came here just because it happens all the time, Beth. But it's been happening more recently. And I think crying is so therapeutic.
It is.
I love crying.
Yeah.
And when I was on fluoxetine, which is my first antidepressant, I couldn't cry.
Right.
And I really missed out on that because it does make you feel better.
Interesting.
Only for a couple of like minutes or an hour, whatever. But it does make you feel better. And I couldn't cry. And I also didn't have much libido.
Oh, well, that's
which
important.
Is annoying.
Yeah.
Two like things that I really like, sex and crying.
Yeah. Cry at the lack of the sex.
Because I'm so alone.
So I don't have any sex and then I cry.
Yeah. No, but I cried before I came here because I realised I can never be happy or nothing's ever enough or I'm always striving for something else or these are all things, I think they're all the same thing really.
Yeah,
they're just different ways of saying the same thing.
It's incredibly relatable what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people listening will relate to this.
Yeah.
And I think it's where OCD lives.
It's postcode.
Yeah. It's its postcode.
Yeah. I don't know if this affects other people with OCD because... in my therapy, I haven't really had time to touch upon it because too much of my sessions has been focused on, I guess, my history and also getting better.
Yeah.
So I really noticed this around puberty, but I had severe irritation.
Irritation.
To repetitive sounds, mainly to do with bodily functions. This might not be OCD related. I might have something
else.
No,
it might be. No, it really might be.
I can remember it happening. Two times that really kind of stood out to me.
Yeah.
Were we used to go to church every Sunday. So I'm not religious now. I'm, what's the word? Agnostic, I guess. Don't really believe in anything, but I kind of believe in something out there. Who knows?
Yeah.
So we used to go every Sunday because my dad is a very devout Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
I used to sit in the pews. And in summer, my brother got really bad hay fever. And he used to sit there, and everything was quiet, and he used to sniff. And he used to sniff every 2 seconds.
I mean, that's annoying.
And it's annoying for a normal person, but he wouldn't do anything about it. He didn't like tissues. He had, like, a weird, like, kind of, like, semi-phobia of tissues.
Yeah.
He didn't like the feel of them. So he didn't blow his nose, didn't like handkerchiefs, because that was not cool. Which I kind of get. They're kind of lame.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of weird. You just kind of carry around a bogey for the rest of the day.
He just sniffed... like that over and over and over and over for an hour.
I mean, that's irritating.
And
yeah.
My dad has no patience whatsoever.
Right.
But he liked to get involved in like our fights.
Okay.
So I would get really annoyed and I would say something to my brother and he'd be like, just get over it, Patrick. Just take a breath, get over it. It's fine. Just like any other normal person. But I physically couldn't, Beth. Right. I physically can't, no matter how hard I try. See, I could be on SAS, Who Dares Wins, because this is tougher than whatever torture they could throw at me. I'm telling you, motherfuckers, like, you have no idea. And I couldn't do anything about it. And
because the irritation was so intense.
Exactly. And if I said anything, my dad would literally blow the fuck up. And it would be World War III.
Wow.
And he would make it a family argument.
And you felt like you couldn't let that go, that feeling of irritation.
Oh, no. But it's involuntary. I couldn't. It consumed my body. I couldn't. It was almost like, I can't explain it to you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that is, I think, that might be like 100%
related to like the basis of my OCD.
Definitely.
But I couldn't let my feelings be known, because if I did, it would become World War III. And so sometimes I would like break and like get annoyed with him in church, like whisper, like, shut up. And my dad would get so angry, and then we would drive back home and he would roar for hours. And I'm talking like 5 hours sweating.
Oh my God.
And then it would become a family argument.
Yeah.
And then he'd bring out stuff from when he and my mum were dating, and then stuff her mum did to him, and at this wedding back in 1975, and blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And they would just go off, and then he wouldn't speak to us for 5 days.
Yeah.
And just on this small thing, so I, no matter how bad I felt, I had to bottle this intense feeling. I can't begin to describe how bad that feeling was, and I used to like kind of semi joke about it when I was in the pews by myself, and I was like, this is going to, like, really affect me when I'm older. Lol.
Wow.
Like, this is really going to give me, like, sort of mental health problem. Because the strain was too much.
Yeah.
Like, there was literally, like, a vein popping out in my forehead because I was trying to keep under control.
Yeah.
And I just knew it was going to kick me in the butt later in life, and it did.
Yeah.
In a different way. And so it was sniffing in that kind of environment where I... Yeah.
Do you think if you'd been able to express it, it would have been less intense?
I think so. Yeah. I think if I'd been allowed to... or given the opportunity, whatever, to express it, it would have been better.
Yeah.
But because I wasn't allowed one little minute, well, not even a smirk, because if I smirked, my brother would be like, you've got no patience.
Oh, my God.
And my mum was the same, and I, no matter how many times I told my parents that I couldn't control these feelings, nobody would listen. And and I think, and there's nothing on them, because I didn't understand.
No, it's
But
just,
I think that was really the focus of my kind of, brain capacity for a long time.
Yeah.
That and kind of my compulsions. So I didn't really like, I think OCD was kind of working away in the background, and then it kind of crept up on me.
Yeah.
Whereas because I was kind of more focused on these things to begin with.
Interesting.
And and to this day, my irritation is through the roof. Like, it makes it really hard to work full time.
Yeah. And then it turned into a cycle of you keep that in.
Yeah. That's what it is. And it's that. And I applied that mentality, keeping it in, to my OCD. So I was doing these compulsions, and I was like, but no, I can't fucking tell anyone.
I can't show
my language
it.
Is so bad right now. I can't show
no,
it.
It's
and then
all
with
about
the obsessions,
swearing.
And then all that, just I used that same model for this, and that just made me so much worse. And I think the OCD is. Really affected my life, but like that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah, even just get rid of that.
Yeah.
It would be better because this is why, I mean, we're getting real now.
Mm.
But that's why I never had a boyfriend because I couldn't put up with someone doing that kind
doing
of stuff.
Doing that stuff.
Because I would say, like, hey, do you mind not sniffing or like coughing?
Yeah.
Or like take some cough medicine or something, and they would get like, they wouldn't understand. And
Because
it's just so, like,
so it's
psychotic.
It's not psychotic at all.
Sorry, that's the wrong word to use, but...
You can look back and go, oh, my God, I think it's because I bottled it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably is very closely linked, or is, your OCD that you felt so strongly about it. Also, you were a teenager.
Yeah, I was...
Emotions are like...
Exactly. But I'd never allowed to have that kind of...
Reaction.
Yeah. But anything teenage related, I always had to be very, like, controlled.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. And I think the irritation stems from my OCD.
Mm.
Because I think when I was in those pews at church, I think because everything was quiet and I was by myself.
It's really hard,
I think that's when my OCD kind of, like, came in.
Mm.
And because there was someone, like, sniffing right next to me, I've spoken to a couple of therapists very briefly about it. They've kind of like brushed it aside because I didn't go into too much detail.
Okay.
And they really wanted to like, really like, because it was CBT,
yeah.
they wanted to really target the fears.
I get that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like this is all very interlinked. I don't think it's ever too late for something to work. Have you been on OCD Action's website?
No, what is that? What are those?
Right. Oh. OCD Action is, and there's also OCD UK. So these are two amazing charities. So they're the charities that I keep mentioning on the podcast. OCD Action.
You want sponsorship?
Yeah. Well, no, just, no, I just want people to find them because they, you can ring them up. They've got a helpline. I need to find out when it's open. I don't think it is all the time yet, but it's definitely open like most days. And you can call them up and speak to somebody. I think pretty much everyone on that helpline has OCD or has had it or knows or understands it a lot. So if you're having a day where you're like, I need to speak to somebody, who's going to understand me? What do I do? And you literally feel so alone, you can call that number. I've been in contact with like an amazing person from OCD Action who's been so helpful before when I've been worrying about like my sister or myself or, you know, different stuff or like asking about different treatment options. Like, there is a community out there. In fact, we should go to the OCD Action conference together this year.
Oh my God.
Because if I'm the first person you've ever spoken to with OCD, you will go to that conference and you are surrounded by hundreds of people with it.
Oh my God.
Or that are affected by it by a family member. And it is really, really quite like amazing.
Yeah.
Just in the sense of you're not alone. It's a journey and you're not at the end of that journey. This isn't it. Mm. That is going to be light again. Thanks so much for listening. Please do check out OCD Action and OCD UK for support. We've linked both in our show notes below. As always, you can find us on Twitter at RepeatPod1 and Instagram at OnRepeatPodcast. You can also email us your stories and feedback on repeatpod@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you. Huge shout out once again to Patrick Ryan for being an amazing guest and for designing our logo. And also we'd love to thank the fabulous Jack Quarton for composing our theme tune. Join us again soon for our next episode, but until then, keep being kind to your mind.